listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam people. Today is a very special episode. It's Access Day at CITR 101.9 FM. We have tons of content related to accessibility for the whole day. This year, our theme is performance. All Access Pass will be doing two feature episodes interviewing some talented performers in different crafts at UBC. One episode will be now at 2 p.m. and the other one will be at regular showtime at 6 p.m. On to our first guest. Our first guest is Rajat. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
How are you today?
Good. Good. Doing really well. It's a nice day outside. Enjoying the sunlight.
Yeah, it's really beautiful in Vancouver. It's like a little too hot. I know it's a product of global warming, so I'm a little concerned. I'm just adjusting my mic. So what year are you at UBC and what are you studying?
So I'm in year four right now and I'm about to go into fifth year. Mm-hmm. Long undergrad, lots of history in between, but I'll finish soon, hopefully. And I'm a composition major, but I'm still keeping up with my piano skills to a similar extent.
Yeah.
With my professors.
Awesome. Sorry. I'll edit all this good. Out. It's
all
fine.
Good.
Yeah, composition's hard. It's very intense. It's very technical, but also very creative. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you have to have that kind of like innate talent. And you play the piano. How long have you been doing that for?
So my history with my piano education has been a bit kind of up and down. Mm-hmm. So I actually took my first ever lesson when I was around five, but my piano teacher was really mean and I stopped.
Yeah.
but as I went through the years, I kind of taught myself, and I would have phases where I would be really obsessed with piano and mm-hmm. those phases would come and go. And by the time I was 13, that's when I started taking lessons properly. And ever since then, it's been sort of my formal training has been consistent from then. Yeah.
Awesome. Feel free to answer in just as much detail as you feel comfortable sharing. What access needs do you identify with?
So I was diagnosed with ADHD.
Recently.
Very recently. Last summer, I think it was August. Yeah. So that was like a big revelation. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of confusion for a long time throughout my life about certain aspects of myself, like my lack of organization, my proclivity for procrastination.
Wow, that's a great phrase. Proclivity for procrastination.
Yeah.
Someone trademark that.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you, Brain.
If composition doesn't work out, you've got a great career in writing.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So ADHD, it explained a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Were you like, I wonder if I have ADHD, like what made you want to go get tested? Because I know a lot of people kind of like see all these like social media posts that are like signs you might have ADHD. And in a way it's kind of dangerous, but in another sense, it's helped a lot of people realize that they have an access need of some sort and it has made their life a lot easier. So how did you kind of decide to go get diagnosed or tested first?
So for the longest time, I kind of blocked out the potential of ever having ADHD because my picture of ADHD was like someone who's, you know, constantly like can't keep still or is shuffling around. And that was in my head for the longest time. And I have like a personal interest in like psychology. I kind of just like try and learn as much about it as I can on my own time. And I came across like a video of this old man, I can't remember his name, but he was talking about adult ADHD and what that looks like. And out of curiosity, I clicked on it. And then this man just proceeded to like tell my entire life story.
It's like, always a little scary when those psychology videos, that's how they get you.
And thing is, I was always very like cognizant of, you know, I don't want to self-diagnose because I know that's that can be an issue. Mm-hmm. But it just felt too accurate. It was like,
can't be a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, all right, let's, I sought out a sort of assessment and it came out with profoundly intense ADHD. So that was
profoundly. You were profoundly attention deficit.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. So when you were diagnosed with ADHD, how did that kind of affect your ability to do composition and music? Because, like, obviously, as an undergraduate student, your life kind of just revolves around school and your degree.
Right.
So once you found out you had ADHD, what were your next steps?
So one of the first things I was thinking about was getting my hands on medication, because, mm-hmm. I mean, from all the reading that I did, it seemed like medication was one of the best ways to mm-hmm. address a lot of the issues. And the other thing that I really had to think about was reprioritizing what I wanted to do. Because one of the issues that I had throughout, I mean, not even just undergrad, even through school, was that I always wanted to play at certain times and then compose at other times. And, mm-hmm. like, I would always lean more towards one as opposed to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to kind of manage that for a long time. So I think just the awareness that I had the tendency to become diverted, knowing that about myself, it helped me structure my life in such a way that if I did get diverted, I would get diverted onto something useful. In
Interesting.
A sense.
So, like, you kind of were able to see certain patterns and yeah. habits and be like, and come up with strategies to kind of yeah. manage that.
Yeah, exactly. And especially recently, one of the kind of, it's like a self-actualization moment mm-hmm. that I kind of came across was that, you know, mathematically speaking, if I have the probability of getting like distracted by certain various things, it's easier for me to just like knock out all the things that are not useful
mm-hmm.
and replace them with things that, even if they're not music, they still are like
yeah.
like enriching in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, like I was a big time gamer for a long time.
Yeah.
and gaming is it's a
dangerous one.
Yeah, like how you know how they say moth to a flame? It's like ADHD
yeah.
to gaming. Oh, it just goes really well together. So I was like, all right, I can't control my relationship with gaming, so I'm just gonna get rid of it altogether. And now like that kind of the feeling of wanting to get stimulated by gaming gets diverted into me wanting to do like kickboxing or something.
Wow.
So it's like that similar brain
yeah.
tickling, but in a more useful way. And
yeah.
that channels into my health and that affects my music positively too. So I think it's just like setting yourself up. I think the 21st century makes it harder for
yeah.
people with ADHD to kind of not
it's
feel debilitated.
Instant gratification fueled society.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
that's
yeah.
not helpful to people with ADHD.
Yeah, yeah, literally.
Yeah.
Like I would spend hours in the morning just scrolling on YouTube or Instagram or something, and yeah, that was just I had to get rid of those apps and just like
that's impressive.
Yeah.
Just your like ability to like dedicate to that is very impressive. I do not have that kind of dedication. Well, I don't know. I enjoy Twitter. I like Twitter.
I mean,
Twitter's silly.
Twitter is a whole. It's like a little playground. Oftentimes,
yeah,
you can just have fun.
Nothing
with,
on
yeah,
Twitter
yeah.
is real.
Yeah.
So once you were diagnosed with ADHD, did you tell the School of Music administrators? Were you like, "Hey, just got diagnosed with this thing"?
Yeah, yeah. I actually told my professors first.
Okay.
And my composition professor was like, "Ah, I see. That makes sense." Because I would always write my week's worth of composition the night before and
yeah.
come in all sleepless and like, hey, I wrote these like 5 pages.
Oh my God, you wrote 5 pages of music in a night?
Sometimes.
That's
but
crazy.
It's not, it wasn't very good. It's,
okay.
It was 5 pages of something, not necessarily music even.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember seeing like this one composition major's like piece of work and they were like hit the clarinet against the stand and I was like, why can't we just go back to sonata form? Like
I know, right?
I'm sure you're a wonderful composer. So once you told your professor that you had ADHD,
yeah.
were they like, okay, this can kind of help us understand how
mm-hmm.
you work and we can support you in ways, or what
yeah.
was what were the next steps?
Yeah, so there were two components to it. There was obviously talking to professors about it and then talking to my reaching out to the Center of Accessibility
mm-hmm.
and both kind of complimented, and also like letting the academic advisor know.
Yeah.
And
that's one thing I really love about the professors at the School of Music is they I like in every I switch majors 4 times but in every department I've been in, nobody cares about their students more than the School of Music.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I can totally see them really collaborating with the Center of Accessibility to like ensure
yeah.
that their students get the most help they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, continue.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, like the like you were saying, I mean, my professors really worked with me in that sense to kind of, like for piano prof, for example, right now I'm studying with Dr. David Fung at the School of Music for Piano. And
Shout out David Fung.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Oh, bless his heart. And he kind of helps, like he structures the lessons in a way that is conducive to the way my mind works.
Wow.
Not, I mean, sometimes inadvertently and sometimes intentionally. So one of the things that's very powerful for people with ADHD is, you know, changing up the script, like what's going on in the lesson continuously. So if we worked on a passage maybe like 10, 15 minutes prior, out of nowhere, he'd be like, okay, play that passage again, you know?
Wow.
And just be like, and just like put me on the spot, which is really fun. And
so he like understood that that was, or did he understand that like that was something that would help people with ADHD?
I think so, yeah.
Wow. That's like really, I feel, I mean, when I played piano, my professors were like, it's my way or the highway. so it's really amazing to hear that these professors were not just like old school.
Yeah, I mean, that's also one thing, really amazing thing about him as a professor himself. He's really dedicated to the craft of teaching, despite being a world-class pianist. Like, he doesn't see that as a substitute for teaching. Like, he treats teaching as its own craft, and he seeks knowledge out, and that was a really valuable thing. And my experience with profs, most of the profs at UBC have always been that way. I'm yet to work with an archaic, dogmatic professor. I think they are, they do exist, and they
they're
are there maybe.
There.
Yeah, but at first,
I don't know what department they're in.
Yeah, yeah, I wonder.
Probably physics.
But yeah, I mean, it was a blessing too. And also, my composition profs were, you know, I think. They had a lot of experience dealing with people with ADHD, because I think composition tends to attract that kind of mind, you know, because I think ADHD has the potential to inspire a lot of internal creativity. And people with ADHD tend to have rich inner worlds, whether they realize it or not. And that can often manifest in terms of creative output. So they had already some like ideas in place, you know, right away when I told them about my ADHD, and they kind of helped me figure out a workflow. I'm still not to say I've actually, you know, solved it. I still have a terrible workflow when it comes to composing, especially, but it's better than it was for many years.
What strategies did you kind of use or implement, or have you implemented, that you have found successful in kind of streamlining your workflow for composition?
I think just understanding just like that not everything has to be fully conceptualized right away.
Yeah, it's a hard, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Especially like writing a paper.
Right.
I feel the need to like immediately the second I sit down, have done all the research, be able to have like the end idea in mind and like everything around it, supporting it. And sometimes it just comes as it does.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you need to go through a lot of like garbage through
trial and error to
like connect the dots, you know?
Yeah.
And that was a big thing. And, you know, treating compositions as more like living organisms almost that grow and evolve within themselves over time. And, because, I mean, even if you look at, like, the great composers of the past, like Rachmaninoff, even, he constantly revised his music. And, they tend to take a life of their own after they're written down, to some extent. So the key is just at least getting something.
Yeah, you got to, I mean, it's got to be garbage before it's good.
Yeah, literally.
That's why they have
garbage is better than zero.
Bad first drafts.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've had a really wonderful experience so far with having your access needs with ADHD met, both by UBC and also the School of Music. And I'm really happy to hear that.
Thank you.
Do you feel like there are any other ways that UBC Music could support you or support those with ADHD in the coming future? Just maybe, like, it could be anything. Like, ways it could have made your life easier.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult to say, because everyone with ADHD has such different presentations of it, too. And for me, for example, I'm by nature really like curious, and I want to, I'm kind of a tryhard in that sense that like I want to, you know, improve at things like really fast. So that's an aspect of me that works well in a university system. But sometimes I think what a lot of people with ADHD might struggle with is a lack of motivation or lack of the feeling of competence. And I know a lot of like that mental, you know, the inner trauma that comes with ADHD over time, a lot of that is down to seeking out therapy. And I think if the Accessibility Center or, you know, whoever can, I guess, if they can direct people with ADHD right away to the resources that they need, I think, especially like seeking medication, I think that tends to be...
That was a long process. Yeah, my friend, it took her a year and a half.
Oh, my.
Took her there a year and a half. She went on it right after exams.
Oh, my. That's so unfortunate.
Yeah, she was really pissed off about that, but... The medication process is a long one for ADHD.
Yeah, yeah. And also just like, I mean, I'm not saying they don't try, they really do try, but it's something like, it's hard for people with ADHD to kind of seek out and reach out sometimes. Yeah. And sometimes like deadlines like that are set just, you know, become invisible in the context of this. So I think, you know, more flexibility in that sense. Maybe I'm asking too much. I'm basically asking for a free pass for deadlines, essentially. But
I mean, I don't think that's actually unreasonable, even outside of the context of access needs, because at some point we're all going to have an access need, even if it's not like a chronic thing that you live with. Like,
exactly.
I know McMaster's, just their school, you get 3 free passes a year.
Oh, wow.
For all of your classes. So if, in case of emergency, if it's under 60%, you just get it excused.
Wow.
But everything gets reweighted. But, like, it's, you don't have to deal with the, like, going through with the emailing and the begging and feeling terrible. I don't actually think that's, like, so in for 3 instances in a year for all of your classes, like, use one instance that covers all 5 classes.
Yeah, I think that would be, that would be absolutely wonderful.
Stuff happens sometimes. Sometimes stuff happens, even if it's not an access need.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, I feel like ADHD is still one of those things that's still so misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, I feel, neurodivergence is.
Yeah.
I definitely don't fully have a well-painted, vibrant picture of what ADHD can present as. But I do know that a lot of my friends with ADHD have this like one craft they excel at like crazy.
Yeah.
Like I have this one friend who is in archaeology at UBC, and within a year she's got like, she just like is committed to like 3 different labs and is going to Peru this summer to do collections work. No big deal.
It's just incredible.
Another friend of mine, his ADHD has really channeled itself into cycling, and he just biked to California. He did 1,000 kilometers in 7 days.
Wow. I can't even imagine.
They're both on meds, and it's just, it's been able to channel in the ways they need.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, I felt that too. I mean, ever since I started my treatment for it, I just like my abilities as a musician just like skyrocketed. And I came up with like new works and things that I couldn't fathom before.
Yeah, one of my friends with ADHD was like, sometimes I forget how smart I am until I take my meds.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what that's like, but I'm so glad you feel that way. What is something that you're working on this summer, just for music?
A lot of repertoire now. So I'm preparing like maybe some 3 hours worth of repertoire.
Oh my gosh.
Lots of stuff for like master's auditions plus competitions, etc.
Where do you want to do your master's?
At UBC with Dr. Fung. That's for piano. Yeah.
Nice. You want to do a piano master's or a composition master's?
Piano master's. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because just there's more of a time limit, I think, for performing, for building a performing career.
Mm-hmm.
I will always be able to compose, and I will always compose throughout my life. But I want to kind of make sure my piano chops are well formed before I'm 32. So that's one aspect.
You're 32,
of it.
Very specific.
Oh yeah, that's like oftentimes the cutoff age for like international competitions, etc.
That's so weirdly specific. It's like,
yeah, I'm not sure why.
Why not 35 or 30?
Yeah, like a nice even rounded
like
number.
Why 32? Anyways, so you're preparing repertoire, you're getting ready for master's auditions.
Yeah, and I'm performing with a couple of orchestras as well.
Oh, in Vancouver?
No, one in Portugal. And
oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was like part of a festival.
That's
part of a
very impressive.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And one in Italy, and that'll be in July, basically, both of those. So I'm really excited to play. It's one of my favorite pieces I'll be playing, the Rachmaninoff 2nd Piano Concerto.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I've always wanted to play with orchestra. It's always been on my mind, and finally I'm getting to. So I'm very grateful that I'm getting that opportunity.
Do you have any advice, anything, any words for anybody who has an accent or ADHD that wants to pursue the School of Music at UBC?
Yeah, I would say the first battle to overcome is recognizing that if this is what you want, if music is what you want, then you have to almost like treat it with the utmost respect that it needs and the time that it needs. And to that extent, be willing to sacrifice things in your life that are not helping with that. Mm-hmm. It's like I was saying earlier, cutting out the nonsense helps a lot.
Do you feel like someone who maybe doesn't have ADHD would be able to balance the nonsense?
Much more so.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried balancing the nonsense. It didn't work. Yeah. And it's like, and also, I mean, I would, one of the things that really kind of helped me was not thinking so much about the specific skill that I'm wanting to hone, but honing the craft of learning.
That's an important one. I feel like that one isn't highlighted enough in general, just in education.
Yeah.
I feel like no one teaches you how to study.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, when people talk about talent, it's not even, I don't think it refers to the actual objective musical talent or something. It's more about the talent of learning and picking things up and understanding how the process is.
Yeah.
Like, for example, you take people like Leonardo da Vinci. He could take any concept and find, the intrinsic patterns within it and see those patterns across multiple disciplines.
It's all critical thinking.
Yeah.
Critical thinking.
Exactly. Yeah.
But,
so that's something that, kindling that inner curiosity that is very common with people with ADHD. Just let yourself be like, wow, what is that? I want to learn about that. And just
allowing yourself go for to it. Explore.
Yeah. Yeah. And doing that with things that really will help and enrich one's life, I think.
Awesome. That's great advice, even if you don't have an access need, but for people with ADHD specifically, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course.
It's been really lovely having you, and I wish you all the best in Portugal this summer.
That'll
Gosh,
be fun.
I want to go to Portugal.
Yeah, I've never been, so that'll be fun.
Yeah.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who experience sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty, and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical, and campus-related advocacy, and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3130. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssasc.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
CITR is powered by Guayaquil Yerba Mate. Yerba mate is a naturally caffeinated drink that comes in a variety of formats, from loose leaf to cans to bottles. Yes, the yellow ones. Guayaquil Mate is all organic, non-GMO, and sure to make you come to life. Guayaquil is more than just a yerba mate brand. They're focused on personal, social, ecological, and cultural growth through their commitment to regenerative practices, which include stewarding the South Atlantic rainforest and partnering with indigenous South American communities through the production of yerba mate. Visit guayaquil.com, GUAYAKI.com, to learn more and find this delicious drink near you. Or stop by CITR station on UBC campus for a free yerba mate can.
And now for our next interviewee, Leticia from the UBC School of Music. Hi, Leticia.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great. It's really hot out.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like the heat. I mean, you like the heat.
Yes.
But I don't like, is Italy like this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it depends. Like, in the summer, it's really hot. Like, it can be up to 40 degrees.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's quite humid where I'm from. So it's not that nice. But right now, it's quite cold there. So we normally have a really rainy spring. And then in June, the weather starts being quite nice. So, yeah.
Interesting. I guess I didn't mention, Leticia is from Italy. And Leticia is doing, she's in her second year of her PhD at UBC in piano performance. So how is that going for you? It's been a long ride.
Yeah, it has been quite challenging since it started, partially because I've never done a university. So BBC is quite is strong in research. Mm-hmm. So I've never done anything like that. And I'm mostly a performer and not great in academics. Mm-hmm. So I've been finding academics quite challenging for me, also because English is not my first language. Mm-hmm. And also have been recently diagnosed with ADHD, which explains why for me most tasks have been quite difficult. I also found struggle in my performance as well. And I thought it was just me being unorganized mm-hmm. and a kind of anxious person. And I also have a diagnosis as a general anxiety. So yeah, those two diagnoses are explaining a lot why my whole life in performing in school has been kind of always a struggle. I mm-hmm. always felt like I needed more time. I needed more help than other people. I could not explain why I always felt like I was always behind things. And yeah, this diagnosis came as a like kind of such a relief for me because I felt, okay, it's not just me. There is something that I can, I have to do to compensate this. So, so I started to do some coachings and I'm evaluating if starting getting on medication, especially because my next years at UBC will be quite heavy because I have a lot of seminars I still have to finish and I'm a little behind with the seminar, with the coursework, because it's hard to be able to do all those readings that normal seminars give to me. So like there are seminars that give you 100 pages every week, so you have to read and then write a little essays and that has to be done in a week where you also have other stuff, other classes. I have to practice, I have to prepare recitals, I have to do rehearsals, and also I'm working on top of this. So I ended up like going to bed at 6 a.m. and then waking up at 8 a.m. and being exhausted and eventually having completely burnout in March or even earlier. So in the last years I've been struggling with this, so getting so tired that I spend the whole summer not doing really anything. And then it's September again and I'm already behind things because I was supposed to work over the summer to do some like catch up on practice and maybe start my dissertation, which is still work in progress. So yeah, I hope that with the coachings and I already started the process on getting an academic concession with an accessibility center. So in this way I can have longer deadlines on assignments. I have already had help from my professors so far. So I spoke with the professors. I was had the classes this year, and one of them was really, all of them were really, really flexible and also understanding. And I felt really supported in this. I felt like it was easy to share. So yeah, like for example, assignments for me take really long time. I often get stuck in small details that don't really matter to get the work done, and so the assignment ends up taking longer than expected. So even if I set up deadline, or there is a deadline set up by the coursework, I can't get it done. So I'm always late, but luckily I feel that the professors gave me like all the understanding, and that was quite nice.
Students of UBC, join us. Join the SSN. A collaboration between the C4 Choral Composition Club and the Music Production Club. With us, you can find someone with whom to collaborate, someone with whom to make music. All skill levels welcome. SSN@gmail.com. Reach out. Together, we can make music. Join us.
Go, 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 go 1 hour of happy, happy, fun time music, Fridays at 12 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Happy, happy, fun time music. Fridays at 12 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM. And unfortunately, we're all human. Except me, of course.
So, quick questions. How did you kind of decide to go get assessed for ADHD? Like, what spurred that?
I started noticing a pattern in all my behaviors. So a lot of things that had been considered normal in my life or just part of my character, I thought that that was just because I call myself quite dysfunctional. So I had quite toxic relationships in the past. Mm-hmm. So those were caused by my impulsive behavior. Then I went through therapy and the therapist told me that I had anxiety and some sort of OCD related to how I was dealing with food. So I have a story of like hyper-controlling my food, being obsessed over my weight at the point that I was like really, my brain was just full of those like diets, just thinking about food all the time. Not be able to do anything else that wasn't like preparing meals and so that was I think quite toxic for me at that time. So I thought it was just like part of my character to be over obsessed over something or being impulsive. So after I did therapy, I started to just be able like to understand when I wanted to do those things. So avoiding impulsivity, try to control myself, but I start noticing other stuff like fading off conversations, zooming out conversations often, and again I thought that was just, I mean, everyone does it, and I thought that was quite normal, especially if you have an intense day. And when I started working, I started noticing a lack of attention for details, and I'm a music teacher, so teaching, you have to always be really careful of what your student is doing. So sometimes I was missing details on the student's preparation, like for example, not reading correctly a syllabus, and that has happened to me recently in the past weeks, where I presented a student for exam, and a few weeks before the exam, noticing that the program is so much longer than what I thought it was, because I didn't read properly. So I just skimmed through. I read really fast and I don't notice things. Same things with school. I was like struggling in reading a text. I was just like started reading, and then unless it was really, really interesting and the thing was catching my attention, I was really struggling to finish to read the paragraphs. I was like skimming and often not understanding what was said, what was not understanding what the task was. So missing like important part of the task. Also, I always done a lot of misspelling in writing, both in English and in Italian. And that has caused me trouble as well recently, because I misspell some of my students' name in a competition subscription, and I got angry parents at me. So and also I have a strong, I get really, really emotional when like someone is coming at me and makes me noticing I made a mistake. I just really feel why I'm such a disaster. Like I feel I always have some sort of anger reaction, like something that is making me so exhausted after that for days I feel like I need to recover from this. So all those sorts of things I always thought it was because that's how I am, and that's every or many people are like that. Or often I was like, maybe it's my aliment, my the diet that's not healthy. So maybe I need vitamins. That's why I forget things. That's why I'm so forgetful. That's why I'm so distracted. And then eventually I started like seeing all those little things coming up together. And I went on Google and I started seeing like why I am so distracted. And ADHD was in the cause of constant lack of focus and all the symptoms were matching, and I found some videos on YouTube that were talking, and they were describing exactly my whole life, and I felt like, wow, this is, it feels like someone is talking about me. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with my partner, and I asked him, like, isn't that for everyone? And he said, no, that's, I'm not like that. And I spoke with friends that they're not like that. They have, like, they have to do a thing. They wake up in the morning and they do the thing. Well, I wake up in the morning, I decide that I have to do the thing, and then I get, my attention gets on something else, and then the coffee's burning on the stove, and then I have to spend 15 minutes to clean the stove because I made a mess, and then I have to do the chores that I left from the day before, and I have a long to-do list mm-hmm. that every day I add more stuff because I haven't done it. Mm-hmm. It's always like, I'll do it later, I'll do it tomorrow, but then it's tomorrow, and it's like a total time blindness, which I am starting realizing. So it means you know that you have 3 months to do something, and it feels it's a really long time. So yeah. You overschedule yourself, you take on more things that you can actually do, mm-hmm. and then you get, I get really involved in those things, but I don't realize that I'm not doing all the things I'm supposed to do. Yeah. So the time is past, and I'm close to the deadline, and I'm not done with the things I have to do. And that happens in my schoolwork. So I often decide to start a lot of new repertoire that's really demanding, which might take longer time. But in my mind, 3 months is just enough time for doing yeah. those things. But also,
you have other stuff in your yes. life to do too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But also, practicing is not easy for me because either I really love the piece I'm practicing. Mm-hmm. So I can go with 10 hours of practice, no stop. It's just, I forget to eat, I forget to do whatever. I'm just practicing. But it's not good practice because I'm not careful to the details. Mm-hmm. So to be a successful musician, you have to cure every single thing in a way that when you go on stage, you don't have any trouble or anything.
Yeah, my old piano teacher used to say, practice doesn't make perfect, it makes permanent.
Yes,
yeah,
that's true.
An important one.
Yes.
Yeah. So all of these little things were coupled up, and then you went and got assessed, and they were like, you have ADHD.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what has it been like since then? Did you immediately go tell your professors and the School of Music?
Well, I told my professor the same day just because he asked me, we were talking about like juries. And mm-hmm. after, I mean, the diagnosis was a 5-step yeah. diagnosis. So I had 5 meetings with a therapist in Italy. It was like, therapist and neurologist is a team that works in a clinic, private mm-hmm. clinic. So I had those online meetings. I prefer doing over my own language. Mm-hmm. And so they asked me a bunch of questions. And by the 4th meeting, they already told me that I had ADHD. They just had to write down the diagnosis and adding a bunch of other things to complete the diagnosis. So excluding other type of things that might happen with ADHD. So I got also the general anxiety assessment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So after I knew it, I felt, okay, I don't want to just overshare this right away. Mm-hmm. I kind of need to, like, I already accepted it because I was pretty sure that yeah. that would have been a positive response. And I know that's not good to say that, but I was hoping to have it.
I don't think that's a bad thing to say at all. I think for a lot of people, it's getting an ADHD diagnosis or any diagnosis that has to do with neurodivergence or mental illness has been very relieving because you feel this like innate sense of what's wrong with me, why am I like this? So to be told, oh no, it's not you, it's just this weird little thing your brain does and yes. we can work on it to make your life easier has been very relieving for a lot of people. So I don't think it's like bad yeah. at all. Yeah. So you told your professor the same day.
Yeah. I already decided to postpone my juries. Mm-hmm. So since I felt like there was kind of sort of flexibility and UBC seems being a pretty supportive school. So mm-hmm. Differently than my school in Italy, the conservatory, they were really strict with deadlines. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do the things by the time, doesn't matter, like you're out. Mm-hmm. So I felt UBC is really supportive on that side. So I felt I could talk with my professor to ask for longer deadline, but also I procrastinate things. So I waited to tell them until my professor came out like the same day I got the diagnosis. Or, I mean, it was like the day after basically because, yeah. And he told me, like, okay, so now we need to figure out your juries. Like, we need to plan the last lessons before your juries. I was like, oh, actually, I decided to not do my juries this this spring. At the end of this term, I would like to have the summer. I just got assessed with DHD, so I would like to get the summer to kind of figure out how to deal with this, starting coachings, maybe starting doing medications, mm-hmm. just to check if I can do it. And so I think I can do it in September. I mean, it was ready for having the jury in April. I think it was almost ready, but I always, I felt like if I had to do it in April with another, I had another recital at the same time, at the mm-hmm. same, in the same week, more or less. So already preparing 75 minutes of recital was really difficult.
Yeah.
And because when I perform, I experience this total loss of focus. It's mm-hmm. like I describe the sensation as my brain suddenly melts on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I am. And I start thinking about other things. And that often, that also makes the performance I'm not saying perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. But it's like I do 20% of what I've been practice. Mm-hmm. It's like it's not me playing anymore.
Yeah.
And I've been always wanted to be a performer, but this issue has kind mm-hmm. of impacted that a lot. So yeah, I talked with my professor the same day, and he told me that I could have, like, I was totally understood my
wow really concert.
Yes, it was really supportive.
Lovely. Yeah. I guess when you work that closely, especially in performance, mm-hmm. you're like two peas in a pod with your professor.
Yes.
Sorry, continue.
Yeah. So yeah, it was like nice to feel really yeah. supported, and I didn't want to tell him right away, but since he brought up the juries
yeah.
and you know he's really really.
Do you have the same professor as Rajat?
No. Yes.
You
the
do?
Same, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What's his name again?
Dr.
David,
Funk.
David Funk.
Yes.
Yeah. I've just heard glowing reviews about
He's
him.
He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So he was also very understanding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was really nice too. I mean, I felt from the very beginning, like yeah. when I started having lessons with him, that I felt there was a safe space.
Yeah.
And I rarely felt that with my professors in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really relieved and was like, finally, this is probably my last professor of my life, because
yeah.
I'm at the end of my
you're in your PhD
journey. So yeah, and I had a lot of professors in the past, and I can say I can the time I had a healthy relationship with my professors, I can count them on, you know, one hand.
Yeah.
It was just often there was a lot of drama going on always, and I'm really happy that I
you found a good
yes,
professor.
And it's a good way to end my journey in as a piano student. So
mm-hmm.
I'm really happy. I felt it was easy to share. I felt like I knew that he would have understood what was going on, and he told me I could just do them in September, just to let the chair of the department know
mm-hmm.
and figuring out, like, getting all my things sorted out. So yeah, it felt nice. It felt such a relief.
It's lovely.
Yes.
So you were recently diagnosed?
Yeah, I got diagnosed. I started in January to have the meetings, and then the diagnosis came out in March.
Okay. That was recent. Wow.
Yes.
So what are your, like, next steps and how to go about, because you said you wanted to take the summer to kind of try and figure out how to work with your ADHD. So what are your next steps for kind of approaching the rest of your PhD? With this new diagnosis? I know we talked a little bit earlier about medication, maybe.
Yes.
Is that something you're hoping to do or try?
Yeah, I would like to try. I'm
yeah.
a little bit concerned about the side effects, because
yeah.
Since I also have anxiety
uh-huh.
and I'm concerned that the medications for ADHD might get the anxiety worse. So
mm-hmm.
It's really hard for me. I spent the last few weeks, honestly, just to try to figure out how much my insurance is covering.
Yeah.
And so just also reading, getting through all of those, like, process and doing phone calls that for me are really stressful. I mean, I am an adult woman, but I feel for me talking...
No, they are so stressful.
Talking with adults is also so stressful. Like,
yeah.
for me, doing phone calls is really hard. And if my partner is around, I just ask him to call the people, like, figuring out my medical insurance,
yeah.
figuring out like the pharmacy insurance, so which medications are covered, which mm-hmm. one are not covered, how can I get those covered, how to book a medical appointment. Mm-hmm. So all those things. And at the same time, I mean, luckily I have my parents in Italy that are also trying to get me on a bunch of like some medical appointments in Italy. Mm-hmm. So just to check all everything that I find the correct medication. So I don't want to take something that then might make other things worse.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I'm planning, I would like to try to finish all my coursework next term. So okay. by December, but it's going to be 3 seminars.
Oh my gosh.
But I chose 3 seminars that are like music theory based, which mm-hmm. I noticed that since I have a strong background in composition, I noticed that music theory is something that I can do. I'm really interested. So for me, if something catch my attention, I can do it. The only issue is the reason why I need the accessibility is to have longer deadlines. Mm-hmm. So like last term, every time I had to send an assignment, I was always late. I was just in time once, mm-hmm. but we had like 4 assignments over the term, and I always like at least mm-hmm. a week late.
Yeah.
So I spoke with the professor at the beginning of the course when I started noticing that for me it was hard to meet the deadline, and I told her that I was a little slow and I needed a little bit more time. I didn't have my diagnosis yet, but mm-hmm. I just let her know, and she was like, totally cool with it. She's like, yeah, it's okay, don't worry, just let me know when you think you're gonna be late, just send me an email, or just send me an email when you email me the assignment directly, so Canvas might close the mm-hmm. thing, but so you can just email it to me. So that was actually nice. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel like I will need more of those that longer yeah. deadlines next term, because I will mm-hmm. have more seminars. I started to reduce some work, so I am ending I'm stopping working too mm-hmm. far away from home, because traveling also, it's kind of overwhelming for me, especially mm-hmm. when the bus is full of people. So finding place to work that are either really close to home, or having private students that I can meet either online or go to their place, which mm-hmm. is close. So something like make it easier for me.
Yeah.
And not having too many hours of work altogether, because I get tired really easily. So for me, I might work 8 hours in a row because I love doing it, but then the day after I'm totally exhausted and I cannot do anything.
Yeah.
So maybe I can do 4 hours and 4 hours instead yeah. of all in once. So if the place I work is close to home, I can actually split those hours easily because I don't have to commute over there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is like, I'm trying to adjust in this way. I'm starting again to do some physical exercise
mm-hmm.
because that helps to don't feel too hyperactive overnight. Yeah, I think like those yeah. will be like my steps right now, are like trying to understand how to deal with all the little issues that comes with ADHD. So in those days, I'm into organizing the tasks and getting the tasks done. Even like something really small, like, you know, just wash your face or make the bed.
Mm-hmm.
So if I wake up and I don't get dressed right away, I risk to just spend my whole morning mm-hmm. without not getting dressed for the day. So I just do it right away.
Yeah.
Or understanding how time works, because ADHD comes with time blindness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I said earlier, like 3 months seems such a long time, but then maybe it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing in a smaller way. So like, I know that I have to leave the house by 12 a.m., but it doesn't mean I have to leave at 12 a.m. 12 p.m. Yes, that's a little bit late. Yeah, so I know that I have to go somewhere and be yeah. there in time. So knowing, like, it's not just the fact of leaving the house, it's how to get ready for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I am I'm meeting weekly with a coach, and she's helping me to get through all those things. Also, another issue, it's the oversharing, so mm-hmm. personal relationships. So how to not, like, start telling all your story or your life story to a person you just met.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my life, I had this habit. I always done it. When I met someone that seemed friendly, I always, like, share all my things,
mm-hmm.
even if it was maybe a person I just met at the moment. And then sometimes I met people that took advantage of this.
Mm-hmm.
So how I avoid to do those things, because the options are two: either the person takes advantage of it, or the person is extremely uncomfortable with all my information.
Yeah.
So either way is not good.
Yeah.
So yeah, So yes, and also I'm still trying to figure out how to get my practice and performing effective, because that's also...
That's hard even if you don't have ADHD.
Yes.
But it's even harder if you do have ADHD.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a difficult one, because it's sometimes hard to motivate yourself. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you fall into these ruts where you're like, I could practice for 12 hours straight.
Yeah. Yeah, either like over practice or under practice. There's never a good way. So I'm trying like to set to myself like a limit of I practice 2 hours a day, which feels not a lot. But if you do 2 hours, and I mean, I've been noticing that 2 hours are just enough, because in 2 hours I can actually take small breaks, and I'm trying to be mindful and realizing when I'm not focused anymore. So understanding the moment I stop focusing and the moment I'm just thinking about something, that means I have to adjust my practice, or maybe I'm tired and it's okay. Or like yesterday, I've been struggling with into restart practicing after my recital, which was 3 weeks ago. Since then, I kind of went to school, kind of trying to practice, but then I just get unmotivated because I know that there is no point in practicing, because then I go performing and it's again, I am not performing perfectly as I am expecting to. So I'm in this like loop of, I don't know, finding motivation, but then getting distracted while I practice because my brain start kind of getting into that talking.
Yeah.
So yeah, yesterday I went to school, I was motivated to practice, and I realized that I had to print my music. So I went into the copy machine rooms to copy room to print my music, and then I saw that there were so many different type of paper, like the colors, the texture, the weight. So I spent like 30 minutes to try to find the perfect sheet to use for the music, and then I found it, and then I printed it, and then I decided to make a cover for the music. So I used the computer and I made a Word page and I made the
And then he lost 30 minutes of practice.
It was actually 2 hours.
Oh my god!
And it was 2 hours. It was 6 p.m. and I was like, I have to go to teach now. So okay. Yeah. So I now have my really nice like book with the cover. I also made it. I found the machine to make
The binder.
The binder. Wow. Yeah. Wow. It was so cool. I started watching a bunch of videos on how to do it.
Oh my god.
So yeah, that was how my practice went yesterday. So, okay, that was. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll practice tomorrow. And that happens often, more often than I notice. And I'm just noticing those things. I've done those sort of things my whole life, but now I'm like, okay, this maybe it's something that most people will not do. Mm-hmm. I just get like really into those not important details, but
yeah,
it's quite fun, you know.
Yeah. It sounds like you are kind of just at the beginning of learning how to work with your ADHD to kind of A, thrive in performance, and B, finish your PhD, which is like hard enough on its own. And I'm really glad to hear that UBC and Dr. David Fung only heard wonderful things about him, have been so accommodating.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on. It was really lovely to hear your story.
Thank
and
you
I would
so
love
much.
To follow up with you sometime in the future.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
Hey, folks. This month, CITR is celebrating its 85th anniversary, and what you're about to hear is a piece of archival tape. Please note that any products, services, or events advertised in this tape are no longer available. Thanks for listening to CITR, and please enjoy whatever it is you're about to hear.
We don't even need God in our service. We got the best songsters.
I tell you what it is. It's some kind of a Texas psychedelic freak out there.
The musicians are tremendous.